Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome back. Nice to see you all again. So, some of you will remember that the shiur tonight is dedicated for the full and speedy recovery of Samra Hana Bat Lulu. Please God, Hashem will bless her with the Fuat Shelema, the merit of the Torah and the shiurim. So, you may remember that we are a 1 week behind. So we have, following this lecture, we will have a further four. The last one was going to be designated as a Q&A in conclusion, but we're going to have to use that to complete. So we are effectively holding on the 22nd of January, lecture 9, although this is the 10th lecture of the series. And we learned last time, if you recall, we learned about tying and untying. You may remember that. And also we talked about cleaning and clothes, and also dyeing as well. Tonight we do three things. We do number one, tzad, which is capturing animals. Number two, we do shochet, which literally means to kill. And number three is tofer and korea, which means sewing and unsewing. That's the three things we do, please God, tonight. Then we have a break for a couple of weeks, and we continue on the 26th of February with a very, very important shiur. That's going to be a very important next one. It's going to be at CCTV, puzzles, lots of practical questions next one. But tonight we're going to do three melachot, tzad, shochet, and tofer and korea. Let's start with tzad. Let's start with, what does tzad mean? Tzad means to trap or to hunt. So where was trapping or hunting in the Mishkan? So we've talked about the roof of the Mishkan in the past. Now, there were three or four roofs, it's a debate, but there were three or four roofs of the Mishkan. One of the roofs was made of elim, made of rams. Okay? Now rams, you can't just take them, you have to actually hunt them, to trap them. There was another animal called the tachash, it's extinct today, we're not exactly sure what it is, but a type of animal which had to be trapped. And the animal, since it had to be trapped, this falls under one of the 39 melachot of the Mishkan. So any form of trapping or hunting on Shabbat is strictly prohibited. Now, before we get to the practical details, there are two... Could you just close the door, Evelyn? Thank you. There are two very important principles when we're talking about this. And they are, A, that there is a distinction between types of animals which are commonly hunted and trapped and those which are not commonly hunted and trapped. So, types of animals or creatures which are regularly, and it's the norm to trap them, then it's forbidden from the Torah to do so. So, for example, a dog, parrots, deers, fish, these type of creatures are types of things which people commonly trap them. And therefore, to trap them on Shabbat is normally going to be forbidden by the Torah. But types of creatures which are not normally hunted to use them, but rather they are hunted to rid yourself of them, those are only forbidden by the Hachamim to trap on Shabbat. So a mouse, rats, and all these types of things, which mosquitoes, flies, right? These types of things, a person traps them, he's only violated the rabbinic prohibition, not a biblical one. The distinction is going to be very important for later. But that's important to remember. Whenever you're trapping a type of creature which is commonly trapped, that's forbidden by the Torah. If it's a creature which is not commonly trapped, that's only forbidden by the Chachamim. That's distinction number one. Distinction number two is that there is it's important, in order to be forbidden by the Torah, the area where the creature is trapped has to be a specific size. And the size is that you can capture it in one hand breath. Which means, if I trap in my living room, I bring into my room from before Shabbat a monkey in, okay? An animal monkey. And I leave it in the living room. Now, that's not considered trapped. Because, from the Torah's perspective, because in order to actually get your hands, once you've let go of it, to get your hands on it again, right? If you get your hands on it again, it's going to be what we're saying. Yeah. To get your hands on it again, it's going to be a problem. Why? Because to get your hands on it, because it's not there, right? It's going to be hard to trap it. That's not considered trapped by the Torah, only by the Chachamim, right? In order for something to be prohibited by the Torah, and for you to have committed the Torah prohibition, you need to have enclosed the creature in an area where you can easily get it. Just stretching your hand, or you don't have to run around to get it. If it's something you have to constantly run to go to get it, then it's going to be forbidden to do so on Shabbat. Only by Chachamim, not by the Torah. Okay? So, what that means is, it depends on each creature. Right? So, let's say something like a bird. If you've got the bird in the cage, then you open the cage, you have it. You know, you're not going to have to run around to catch the bird. That's forbidden by the Torah. But to trap a bird in your living room, to take it from outside where it was flying around and bring it and leave it in your living room, that's only forbidden by the Chachamim. Because it's not, you're going to have, you have a further act of trapping in order to get it under your control. But a deer, for example, you bring a deer into your living room, that's already trapped. Because how big is your living room that you can catch it in one or two, just to run after a little bit and you'll catch it. And therefore a deer will be forbidden by the Torah. So it depends on the type of creature and the area. So that's two important principles when we are talking about tzad. Number one is that what type of creature is it? If it's a creature which is commonly trapped, then it's forbidden by the Torah to trap it. If it's a creature which is not commonly trapped, it's only forbidden by the Chachamim to trap on Shabbat. Secondly, even if it's a creature which is commonly trapped, you have to trap it in an area in which you can obtain it. Once you've let go of it, you can obtain it in a few moments. If, however, it takes time for you to obtain it, then it's only forbidden midrabbanan, not by the Torah. Exactly. Now, coming to a mouse trap on Shabbat. Are you allowed to use a mouse trap on Shabbat? If you have you suspect you have mice in the house, you want to use a trap in order to get these mice. So now, of course, the best thing is to trap it from before, to set this trap before Shabbat. Because, as we've learned in the past, whenever you do something before Shabbat, generally speaking, it's permitted for it to continue over the course of Shabbat. So to set the mouse trap from before Shabbat, that's fine. Okay? Even if the mouse is trapped on Shabbat or the rat is trapped on Shabbat, that's fine because you set it before. But let's say I didn't do so. I forgot or I didn't know. And on Shabbat, I suspect that there are mice in the house. What do I do now? So if I take the mouse trap and I put it in front of the mouse and the mouse immediately goes in, that's forbidden by the Torah to do. Because you have actually gone and done it. I'm not talking about cases where there's children and there's rats. I'll talk about it in a moment. But, you know, mice are not, most of the time, they're not dangerous. And therefore, Sorry?
Very dangerous.
Mice.
That's the only thing I'm afraid of. No human being, nobody except the mice.
What, more than rats? I don't know if that's... you could be terrified of them, you may be disgusted by them, but whether they are dangerous, from a health perspective, that I'm not sure about, and apparently they're not. If you set the trap and it directly goes into your trap, straight away, immediately, that's forbidden by the Torah. If, however, you set it, and it's not certain the mouse will enter or not, and it enters sometime later during the course of the day, because it's not immediately happening, it's only forbidden by the Chachamim, not by the Torah. But it's still forbidden by the Rabbanan. Nonetheless, one may instruct a non-Jew to set such a trap on Shabbat in a case where you're not directly trapping the mouse. Why? Because there are principles discussed in the past. You may ask a non-Jew to do a rabbinic prohibition when there is a mitzvah or serious discomfort at stake. And it's discomfort, you knowing you may have a mouse in the house. That wasn't intended. You may have a mouse in the house. And so that can be serious discomfort in the course of Shabbat. Yeah, discomfort doesn't have to be physical discomfort, it would be emotional discomfort as well. And therefore you can ask a non-Jew certainly to set the trap on Shabbat itself. Because as I've explained, you're asking a non-Jew to do something forbidden by the Hachamim, And whenever there's pain involved, one is allowed to. Furthermore, the Poskim actually write that you don't even need to ask a non-Jew. If a person himself is seriously discomforted by knowing that there are mice in the house, potentially, then he himself may set the trap as long as he's not doing it directly. The reason being is, why? Who can think of the reason why this is the case? Why would this be the case?
Is that grammar or something?
No, you're doing it directly. No, it's from the Rabbanan in this case.
Why?
No, but you can't do something bidden by Rabbanan because you're doing it. It's twice removed. The reason is because we explained at the beginning that mice, even when you trap it because you want the mouse, it's a type of creature which isn't commonly trapped. And therefore the whole creature is only a creature forbidden rabbinically. Right? And you're not doing it immediately, so it's two Rabbanans. Even though you are doing it as a Jew, it's still permissible. There are two, it's twice removed from a biblical prohibition. Number one, it's not happening immediately. It's already downgraded. And number two is the type of creature being trapped is a creature which isn't commonly trapped. It's not trapped to use. Of course, we're always trapping mice and rats. But we don't trap them to use them. And therefore, it's only been by midrabanan. Therefore, two drabanans, makom tzar, when there is pain and discomfort involved, is permissible. And therefore, of course, one should set the mouse trap before Shabbat. If one didn't do so, one may himself, without even having to ask a non-Jew, one may himself set the trap on Shabbat if he is discomforted by so. Now I'm talking about mice. The rats one certainly may, especially if there are children around, then one must do so, because of course that's a serious, that can be dangerous, and therefore one would definitely be allowed to. So that's point number one with regards to mice and rats. Now what happens if you're sitting, it's a Shabbat day in the summer, let's say, in England the weather changes, and it could be sunny, and you've opened the windows, and then in flies a butterfly. And then, the butterfly, there it is, it's flying around in your room, and then it gets cold suddenly, it starts raining, it gets cold, you want to close the window. Would you be allowed to close the window or not?
Yes.
Yeah.
Why would you be allowed? You're trapping the butterfly.
It's indirect.
It's not indirect. It's directly happening. By you closing
the window, you're not trying to trap the butterfly.
But it's directly happening. It's an inevitable consequence of your action. Even if it's not intention, it's a psych ratio. It's an inevitable consequence. Psych ratio. True, you're doing it. Just like when I cut the chicken's head because I want to play with it, football, the Gemara says, and I want to play ball with it. You can't say I don't intend to kill, right? Even though you're not intending to kill. Because it's an inevitable consequence of your actions, forbidden. So for closing the window, it's an inevitable consequence will be that you're trapping the butterfly. Nonetheless, still permissible. The reason being is because what somebody said about area? It's a living room and it's a butterfly. It's not big enough to capture in one go.
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely only a rabbinic. Now, when you're doing something which has an inevitable consequence, and it's with the Rabbanan, and there is any discomfort involved, you're doing it because you're cold, you want to close the window, that's permissible. It's called Psik Reisha Bid Rabbanan, B'makom Tzar, is Mutar. You're doing it, you're closing the window, but you're not doing it to catch the butterfly, you're doing it because you're cold. But it's an inevitable consequence, and it's with something rabbinic in nature, because it's not small enough to catch it in one go, and there is discomfort, therefore one may close the window, provided doing it not to catch the butterfly. Rather, he's cold, he may close the window on Shabbat. That's with regards to that. Now moving on to a new point, domesticated animals. The reason why trapping is forbidden on Shabbat is because you are taking something which was initially free to roam, and now you are trapping it, that's forbidden. But something or an animal which is domesticated is considered from a halachic perspective already trapped. Although it's walking around, but because they are nichna'im, because they are subdued to human beings, to their owner, therefore they're considered already trapped. And therefore any animal which you have at home, which fully accepts the authority of its owner, one may be trapped on Shabbat, not just by the owner, but by anyone. Because the animal is already considered trapped. Having said that, we'll talk about this when we get to the lecture, this penultimate lecture which will be on Muktzah. Animals, generally speaking, on Muktzah. Now it's difficult to explain that, we'll discuss another time why, but animals generally are Muktzah. You cannot lift them up and carry them. However, one may push them if necessary. Okay, so if you want the animal is not going you know, how you would like it to, you may, not cruelly, but you know, direct it in the right path to get back home. One may do so, but we'll talk about when we get to the Mukta lecture a bit more. But we should be aware that any domesticated animal is permissible. However, what can happen is when you just recently bought a new pet, or something like a parrot, for example. A parrot, you know, even if it's a home, it's not, it doesn't subdue itself to its owner, right? If you let it out, it's going to fly around. It's not going to listen to you when it goes. Sometimes it's not going to listen to you when it gets to go back in the cage. So how are you going to feed such a parrot? If you open the door of the cage, it's, you know, you've opened it, and now by closing it, you're trapping it. So in such a case, you have to either feed it through the cage, or you open the cage and you block the cage with your body, so it's still considered trapped. If you open the cage, even if it didn't fly out, but once you've opened it, you've taken away its trapped status, and by closing the door of the cage, you're now re-trapping it. A type of creature which isn't considered domesticated, isn't considered subdued to its owner. And therefore, such creatures, you have to be careful. A newly bought dog, which doesn't yet accept its owner's orders, if you're leaving the house and the dog is there, you can't just open the door and then close it, because you're going to be trapping it. What you have to do is you leave the house, not creating a big enough space between yourself and the door, and you go out and you close it behind you, so it was never, it was never actually the state, the initial state of trapping was never revoked. It's actually just continued to be, because when you open the door, your body was there and you closed it. But that's only with types of creatures which are not domesticated. If it's fully domesticated, there is no problem at all to trap it on Shabbat. Now, an interesting question. You may think it's funny, but it's actually discussed a lot. Human beings, we are mammals. Okay, we're social mammals, but we are mammals. And so, if trapping is forbidden for all mammals, is it permissible to trap a human being on Shabbat? No, it's a serious question. This is discussed. In what context? I'll give you a few contexts. Very simple. Firstly, putting locking a child up in a room. Okay, I'm not saying this is a correct way of educating children, but you know, we know these things do happen. And would you be allowed to do that? Seemingly, you're trapping the child. Or, in Israel, you have criminals, and you may have Jewish prison attendants who have to work on Shabbat. Yeah. And somebody's tried to escape, and can they catch him on Shabbat and put him back in prison on Shabbat? These questions can happen. Perhaps that's trapping. Human beings are mammals. So is that a problem? So what would you say? Is that mutar or asur?
Maximum trapping, because we're not usually trapped for use.
Embe minon itzot. It's not a regular thing. True. Good point. But it's still forbidden. So one way forward, the Tzitzel Yezer Blazer Waldenberg, he says that they're considered domesticated. He's talking about children. And that makes sense, because children listen to their parents. Children, not teenagers. And therefore, up till that age, you know, up till that age, and I can't understand, you know, toddlers, for example, or young children, now you could lock in the room because they're already considered trapped, because they, you know, they're under the authority of their parents. But it doesn't explain teenagers, it doesn't explain somebody running away from the police. You want a Jewish person, you want to trap him. Would that be permissible? So as you correctly said, it's human beings are not creatures which are commonly trapped. And therefore it's downgraded, definitely it's not going to be biblically forbidden. But someone argues it's actually permissible because it's so straight, huh?
Because an infection would kill
somebody. No, not to, of course. If he's a murderer, then of course you could catch 100%. We're talking about, let's say, a criminal who just escaped because, I don't know, he was dealing with something forbidden to deal with. No danger to society, right? But there's another idea, and this is an important idea, how the Torah understands human psychology. Is that whenever the Torah, in 12 places in the Torah says the word kah, take a human being. So for example, God says to Moshe, kah et Aaron, take Aaron. Or kah et or God tells Aaron, kah et Elazar, take Elazar. Whenever the Torah says, in 12 places in the Torah, when the Torah says take someone, a human being, not take something, not take staff, but take someone, Rashi always comments, yeah, consistently throughout the Torah, Rashi comments, kachil bidvarim, take him, entice him with words. Rashi each time does this. Rabbi, the Torah talks about taking a human being, as she always says, speak to him, encourage him, motivate him, entice him to come with you. Why is this? The Maharal, he explains that a human being, even if you take their body, it's not considered taking. Because a human being, unlike animals, our true essence is our mind. It's our intellect. So even if you take a human being's body and you trap them in a confined area, you haven't really trapped them because their mind can still wander and be thinking about, they could be trapped in a prison in London and they're thinking about Australia. They're free. Their mind is free. And our essence is our mind, not our body. And therefore, someone argue there is no trapping when it comes to human beings because our minds are free to roam. Are you argue it's not applicable to children or to babies? True, but then you've got the other idea which we said, that they're under the authority of their parents anyway. So. And therefore, generally speaking, there wouldn't be a problem of trapping human beings on Shabbat. But this is a question which is seriously discussed. And in all circumstances, one may do so. One final point with regards to trapping, and that is a mosquito or a creature which is disturbing you.
A wasp.
Are you allowed to trap it on Shabbat? So you're not allowed to trap it. Okay, it's forbidden. Now, is it forbidden by the Torah to trap it or forbidden by the Hachamim to trap it? Of course. It's only forbidden by the Rabbanan. Why? Because the type of creature which isn't commonly trapped. It's not trapped to use. Yeah. Again, when I mean not commonly trapped, I mean it's not trapped to be used. Right? And therefore it's forbidden by the Rabbanan to do so. However, Hachamim said, if it's on a person's flesh and it's imminently going to stink, then one may trap. In such a case, the rabbis said they waived their rabbinic prohibition and said because it's on your body or it's imminently going to sting you, one is allowed to trap in such a case. When you can't kill it, we'll talk about that in a second, one can trap it, but only if it's imminently about to sting you. Otherwise, it's forbidden to trap. Even if you're trying to sleep and it's buzzing around in the room, and you don't think, you know, it's not on your body, it's not going to, it may sting you later on, but now it's not. And you're trying to sleep and it's bothering you, there is no heter, there's no allowance to trap it on Shabbat. Because you're trapping during something forbidden by the Hachamim. Okay. That brings us to the end of Sad, end of trapping. We'll recap that in a moment. I just want to move on to Shochet, the second melacha we're going to discuss tonight, which has got to do with killing. And this is another one of the 39 melachot to kill. Because in the Mishkan, of course, once they hunted and trapped these animals, they killed it. Right? They killed them in order to use their skin, to skin it and to use the hides. And for killing is prohibited. Now, we just talked about the wasp or the mosquito, you're allowed to trap it. You're not allowed to kill it. Even if it's, of course, if it's a kwach nefesh, of course you can. You know, a person's got an allergy, of course, then he may. But normal people, they wouldn't be allowed to, because the whole reason we said you can trap it is because with trapping, we have this special allowance. If it's not something which is commonly trapped, you're allowed to, it's only forbidden rabbinically. Because it's only forbidden rabbinically, therefore, if it's on your body and there's potential pain involved, one's allowed to trap it. But to kill it, that's not permissible. And therefore, even if a person has it on his body and it's stinging him, you have a wasp, a mosquito, and there's no danger involved, only pain, then one may not kill it, one may overtake to any trap it, one may not kill it on Shabbat. Any questions what we've discussed so far? So just to recap what we said about sad about hunting.
Ask you a question.
Yeah, I can see it. Thank you. Thank you for bringing it to my attention. So just to summarize the hunting, two things we said about hunting is that it's only forbidden by the Torah if it's a creature which is commonly trapped to use what you're trapping in. Secondly, it's in a small enough area. And we talked about setting a mouse trap. We said one preferably should do it before Shabbat. However, if it was done on Shabbat, one may himself do so as long as it's not imminently trapping the mouse. We talked about if a bird or a fly comes into your house and you may close the window just because you're cold. And then we said that domesticated creatures are permissible to be trapped, the muktzah, however. And human beings are allowed to be trapped. And wasps etc., may not be trapped on Shabbat unless on the your body, but they may not be killed in all circumstances unless there is danger involved. Yes. I don't think it's dangerous. If there's an allergy, then it's something else.
So even if it's like a wasp or anything, you just let a newborn baby, like.
Perhaps the baby. Yeah, baby. That probably is. They could, if it's hovering in the room, they could kill it because that could be dangerous. That could, for a baby. Yes, true. I'm talking about a toddler. It's unlikely that you know there's any pikuach nefesh, any risk to life involved, and therefore I'm able to trap it, but not kill it.
You can have like mouse traps that just trap the mouse but doesn't necessarily kill them. You can have also done ones that have like.
Doesn't matter.
Poison.
Trapping by itself is forbidden. Yeah. So
you said you could do that before Shabbat.
Yeah.
What happens if you have like the traps where you can like you put poison in so they're going to die?
When are you putting the poison in?
Before Shabbat.
That's fine. So you're not doing anything on Shabbat.
Even though it's been killed.
Yeah.
It's the same with like a mosquito zapper kind of thing.
Yeah. You're not doing anything on Shabbat. Talking about it, let's go on to the next point. Fly sprays. Are you allowed to? It's a summer and you've got flies all over the room and they're really bothering you. You want to spray them? Are you like Evelyn? You like to spray them on Shabbat?
Around them.
Evelyn, you like to spray them?
Not
fly spray. Them. You like to spray them if you've got flies in the room?
You can't spray them directly on them.
Though. Huh? You're killing them. So seemingly you can't. So you can't spray on them. Certainly you can't spray on them. However, what you could do is if you open a window and you spray all around the room, not directly on the insects, not directly on the flies. And you could, why? Because it's not a psikresha. It's not inevitable that you're killing them. It's likely, it's possible.
But that's how you use the spray. You don't. Sometimes you can spray at it, but often they tell you to spray the room and go out. So
yeah, so that's fine, because you're not directly killing it. And you've given it the opportunity to run out. If the window is closed,
yeah.
And you spray it and then leave the room and close the door, then they're going to definitely die.
Yeah.
That's inevitable. If you've opened the window, then you've given them a chance, they may die, they may not die. They may see the window, they may not see the window. It's up to them. Right? It has to look up and see the window. But like Wittgenstein once said, the whole of human philosophy is to allow the fly to look up and get out of the bottle. Right? And that's what we're trying to get out of the room. And you're going to the child, you're going to the ability to do so, it may not do so, but it has the ability to do so, and therefore it's not inevitable consequence,
yeah.
And therefore it is permissible to be done on Shabbat. Now this is an interesting question, two interesting questions. Is what happens with regards to, you have an insect crawling around in your sink on Shabbat, or infested vegetables, which need to be checked. Are you allowed to do that on Shabbat? So let's start with the first question. Let's say you have in your sink, in your washing basin, you have there some insects.
What do you have to check? I didn't hear.
I'll come to that in a moment. I'll come to that in a moment. I'm starting with you got insects crawling around in
right.
your sink. Are you allowed to switch the tap on? You want to wash your hands. Can I switch the tap on? Or perhaps not, because inevitably I'm going to be killing these spiders perhaps. So let's discuss about a similar question, which the poskim, the authorities talk about, and that they talk about extensively, is the toilet. Sometimes, especially in the summer, you can have in the toilet itself, it can be loads of insects or flies around there. And when you flush the chain, then you're effectively killing them. So would you be allowed to flush that or not? And the poskim discusses at length, and they all rule it's permissible to do so, and there are four reasons they give. Number one is, it's a melacha shinatzicha legufa, which means, in short, you're not killing it to use what you are killing. And therefore, that definitely downgrades it to a rabbinic level. Whenever you do something, which is forbidden, but you don't do it for the purpose of what was done in the Mishkan. The Mishkan, why did they do it? They killed the creature's wife to use it, to use the hides. Hey, you're killing it just to kill it. You don't want it. That's number one, it's downgraded to rabbinic level. Number two, someone argued, it's not a psikresha. It's not inevitable that you're going to kill these insects in the toilet. Why? They're going to die, but it may not be with the first flush. And maybe they'll be flushed down into the water and later on they're going to drown in the water. That's no longer a direct inevitable consequence. That's a grammar. That's a causation. Right? You got that? So it's not directly you're killing them. Thirdly, they say, is that... Okay, one, the third one's a bit more complicated. The third point, the fourth point is that kavod abriot, which means human dignity. Human dignity, the rabbanans are normally waived. And therefore, in this case, they say one may flush the toilet in such a case. When there are flies, you've used the toilet, there are flies there, you may flush the toilet. Coming to our question in the sink, though, there's no kavod abriot, there's no human dignity involved. And you could argue that's psik resha, but again, here you have the rationale which I just said. When you switch on the tap, if you directly switch it onto the insect itself, then yeah, probably going to be killing it directly. Yeah, it's only forbidden rabbinically. But if it's on the side, if it's in the it's in the sink itself, but it's not actually, you're not, the force of the water doesn't fall directly onto the insect, rather it falls in the sink and then it drowns, that's already indirect. Therefore, the psik resha, when you're not intending to do it, one is permissible to do. So, to summarize, to switch on the switch to flush a toilet where there's insects in it, one may do so. To switch on a tap where there are spiders or insects inside it, one mustn't do it if it's water's falling directly onto the insect. However, if it's going to fall in the sink and then it's going to drown as a result, then one may do so. However, what can happen is you switch on the tap for a long time, and then you are yourself directly drowning the insects. I wouldn't be allowed. You see the difference? If you switch on the tap and there's a flow, and then later on it gets sucked into, the spiders get sucked out, that'll be fine. But to fill it up to the extent that they're definitely going to drown in this, then that would be prohibited to do. Now, washing vegetables. We know there are certain types of vegetables which need to be washed before Shabbat. Which needs to be cleaned for infestation. Now, the best is always to wash these before Shabbat. So mint, lettuce, check it before Shabbat. You didn't do so, you forgot to do so, you didn't have a chance to do so. May you do so on Shabbat? What would you say? Are you allowed to check these insects, check these vegetables on Shabbat itself or not?
Takana, I mean.
Hmm?
You're preparing, I mean,
preparing?
Takana, I mean, you're making something which you couldn't have, now you can have this.
Tikkun mana, you mean tikkun mana?
Yeah, something like that.
No, tikkun mana is when it's intrinsically asur, like truma. Here it's not intrinsically asur, just there are insects around it. Not intrinsically asur. Alright? So what would you say?
You don't care if the insect dies, as long as it goes off.
Okay, but it's secretion, huh? What would you say? You can't clean your room?
If you have to eat something, you can do it.
Why?
I've seen the shomas doing strawberries, it will go off.
They should do it before Shabbat. They should do it. Pardon? They should do it before Shabbat.
I've seen them doing it on Shabbat.
Yeah, on Shabbat, I tell you what. So,
food, yeah?
Fruit.
Yeah, to eat.
So, the answer is as follows. Is that if it's not definitely infested, one may do so. The reason being is, it's a psik resha, it's inevitable whilst you're cleaning it. If there were insects, you're going to kill it, but you don't know if there are insects there. And this is called a suffix psik resha. There's a doubt whether you're going to inevitably kill the insects or not. You don't know if there are insects there or not. Such a case, one is allowed to do on Shabbat. Because you don't intend to kill the insects. It's inevitably going to happen. But that's only if there are insects there. You don't know if they are there or not. So it's a suffix, there's a doubt whether it's a psik resha or not. Whether your action of cleaning the vegetables is inevitably killing the insects. Safek psik resha is mutar, permissible. However, things like raspberries. Yeah, even if you work out a way of checking them, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Extremely difficult to check such things. But you know what I've seen, they are almost always infested. You can always find something inside them, each one of them. So something like that, even if you learned the correct way of checking them, which is very difficult, there has to be a way to check everything, because Hashem didn't create fruit for us not to eat. Yeah, it's very difficult, possible, very difficult, but such fruit cannot really be checked on Shabbat, because it's almost inevitable that you're going to be killing there, and that isn't allowed. Therefore, you should always try to make sure to check the vegetables and fruit before Shabbat. If it wasn't done, and if it's not definitely infested, then one may. If you see it and you open the lettuce and you see swarming inside it, you see insects, well, I couldn't trust that on Shabbat. That's definitely going to be killing it as you're cleaning it. Okay, two final points before the end of Shochet. So number one is with regards to blood. So we're talking about killing. Killing is killing, of course. But from Torah's perspective, Torah says it's black and white, actually, in Parshat Achrimot. Torah says, Ke'adam hu anafesh. Yeah, blood is also part of a person's life. And when a person extracts blood on Shabbat, it's like he's killing. It's a form of killing, extracting blood. And whenever a new person extracts blood on Shabbat for the purpose of using the blood, that's forbidden by the Torah. So, a blood test to be taken on Shabbat, if there is no necessity for it to be done specifically on Saturday, and there's no urgency, and you can have an appointment in a few days' time, and you don't need to check now, strictly forbidden to do so on Shabbat, it's forbidden by the Torah to do so. Because you are extracting blood, that's a form of killing, and you're using what you're extracting. You need it, you want it. That is a real prohibited, really prohibited by the Torah, and that's strictly forbidden on Shabbat. Similarly, to pinch someone, to pinch yourself, to pinch someone else, you are drawing the blood. Think about it, you're drawing the blood. If you pinch hard enough, you're drawing the blood. And that would be forbidden to do so. To pinch somebody else on Shabbat, even if they give you permission to do so, one may not do if it's hard enough, because you're going to be drawing the blood to the surface of the skin, which would be prohibited. Now what we need to discuss now is brushing teeth on Shabbat. Is one allowed to brush his or her teeth on Shabbat or not? And if one is allowed to brush one's teeth, are you allowed to use toothpaste? So let's begin with brushing teeth without toothpaste. Using a toothbrush with water to brush your teeth, is that permissible or is it not permissible to do so? So, we're going to talk about that very much. It's human without toothpaste. Well, so, firstly, what are the potential issues? Firstly, you could argue that you're doing sechita. You are squeezing out the water from the toothbrush. Right? As you're brushing, you're squeezing out. Now, that's not a problem. I'm not going to tell you why it's quite complicated, why it's a sfeika, but it's permissible to do so. There's no problem of squeezing out the water from the toothbrush. The other potential issue is that you're going to be drawing blood from your teeth. And we've just learned that drawing blood is prohibited. But again, most people, when we brush the teeth and there's blood, it doesn't always happen. Because it doesn't always happen, it's not psikresha, it's not inevitable, and therefore if it does happen, it's fine. Even if it does happen, because the rational mitkaven, you have no intention for it. One can't brush his teeth with the intention to draw the blood out. You can't do it, because you want to, whatever reason, you want to draw blood. But if you're brushing your teeth and blood comes out, it doesn't always happen, that's permissible. It's not definitely going to happen. However, a person who regularly brushes his teeth and almost always it bleeds, and would not be allowed to brush his teeth on Shabbat, even without toothpaste, because of the problem of secretion. It's inevitably going to be drawing blood on Shabbat, which is prohibited. In cases where, and so for most people, it won't be an issue, but that's important to note. If a person, whenever he brushes his teeth, always, if he bleeds, then he may not brush his teeth on Shabbat. One does not need to designate a toothbrush for Shabbat. Okay, normal toothbrush may be used. Some have the custom to have a special toothbrush for Shabbat. It's not necessary. One is allowed to do so. And finally, after using the toothbrush, one may wash it and clean it, because it's not considered preparation for the next day. He's just doing it because he wants it to be clean now. That's permissible to do so. So therefore, brushing one's teeth on Shabbat without toothpaste is basically fine. Using water, provided you do not, you're not a person who regularly bleeds when you brush your teeth. The question, though, this is the more contentious issue, is with toothpaste. Are you allowed to use toothpaste to brush your teeth or not? So, the truth is, the vast majority of the poskim prohibit it. And they say the problem is marath is smoothing. Marath is smoothing things out on Shabbat. And when you are brushing your teeth, you are smoothening the toothpaste across your teeth. That's the, as I said, that's the consensus of the majority of the poskim. However, Chama Avadia Yosef ruled that one is allowed to. One is allowed to brush teeth even with toothpaste on Shabbat. The reason being is that he proved that the prohibition of smoothening something out on Shabbat is only when you're smoothening it and you want it to be smooth. You want it to remain smooth. So for example, the Gemara talks about you smooth on a barrel, a hole in a barrel, some wax. Okay, so you're smoothing it out to close the hole. And you want it to be smooth. That's prohibited. When you're just smoothing something, you have no interest in it being smooth, and he wants to argue it's a misabah. And therefore, he says, when you're brushing your teeth, although the toothpaste becomes, as you're brushing it, becomes spread out over your teeth, but you have no interest in it, and it's going to be washed away straight away, therefore there's no problem. Look, this is a big discussion. As I said, you know, there is what to rely on to do so. But if one can use mouthwash, one can use more, you can get liquid toothpaste, or you don't have this issue. Right, if one can use that or mouthwash, you know, not to bring himself into this big debate. If one's genuinely stuck without mouthwash or liquid toothpaste, then he feels very, very, not comfortable, not brushing his teeth with toothpaste, then there is what to rely on to do so, to brush one's teeth with toothpaste on Shabbat. There's definitely what to rely on.
Do you know she
know? No, normally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Floss is the same with the toothbrush. Again, if you floss your teeth, if you always bleed after flossing, that's much more common. Many people bleed when they floss their teeth. You can't do so on Shabbat. If wherever you floss it, and it doesn't always bleed, then one may floss his teeth on Shabbat. Any questions on that before we move on? Okay. Good. So that brings us to the end of killing. So we've explained that one may not kill a mosquito or fly unless there is danger to life. A fly spray one may use on Shabbat, provided it doesn't spray directly on the creatures and it leaves an escape route for them, potential escape route. One may open the tap, as long as the tap isn't directly being poured onto the insects. One may check vegetables on Shabbat, preferably one should use it before Shabbat, one may do so on Shabbat. As long as they're not definitely infested. And one is forbidden to draw blood on Shabbat. One may brush his teeth on Shabbat, preferably not with toothpaste, but there is what to rely on to use toothpaste on Shabbat. We have 10 minutes remaining, and we'll move on to the third point. This is so much to talk about. We'll just flesh out the main issues here. The third one is tofer and korea, which means sewing and unsewing. And this is in the Mishkan. They had to, of course, sew the pieces of cloth together to make the roof of the Mishkan. And sewing, in practical terms, for us, they means to attach two items together. So, to glue together two pieces of paper, to sellotape things together, that's called sewing. And the opposite is tearing. When you unstick them, that's forbidden. To staple two pieces of paper together, that is sewing, that's prohibited. Glue, for example, also what can be sometimes quite common, to tighten loose stitches, this is claimed in Shulchan Aruch, is forbidden. You know, sometimes you have a tablecloth, or a shirt, let's say, and some of the stitches have come out, and then you pull it to bring the stitch back in, right? That's prohibited by the Torah to do so. Because then you are, in a sense, restitching it, bringing it back in. And this is clear, this is when I talked about this. That's forbidden to do so. That's all part of sewing. Now what we need to discuss is, can you use safety pins on Shabbat? Can you use Velcro on Shabbat? Can you use a zipper? And opening envelopes and letters. We've got a lot to get through. We've got a lot to get through. Okay, so I'm just quickly mention the main points here. Firstly, with regards to safety pins. May one use a safety pin on Shabbat to attach things together. So let's start with the coat. Are you allowed to button up your coat on Shabbat? Of course you can. Why? Because the button demonstrates, the fact you have a button there demonstrates that this is not something which is going to be left permanently. It's made to be open and closed. Tofer is when you attach two things together permanently. Right? And if the button, the coat, or the jacket was meant to constantly be closed, it would come like that. There's a button there, so that you have the option, the variability, sometimes it's open, sometimes it's closed. So the button shows you that you don't want it to be permanent. I mean, you're not doing it permanently, it's permissible. Therefore, the same applies to safety pins. Because you have the safety pin there shows this isn't considered an act of sewing. Just like you're not going to say when you close the door of a house, you're building. Why don't we say that? You close the house of a living, of a door, of a room, you're building, aren't you? No, because it's there. It opens and closes. That's just the way it does. You know, it opens and closes. It's not actually sealed there. Similarly, button opens and closes. That's not called sewing it. Similarly, using a safety pin on Shabbat is permissible. That's just considered opening and closing, and therefore one may do so. Safety pins are totally fine, even for an extended period of time. Similarly, zippers. So a zipper, for example, you want to zip your hood on your coat. You've taken it off, some coats come like that. You can zip the hood onto the coat. Same idea, the poskim that's permissible, because the zipper shows it's the type of thing which is commonly taken on and off. And therefore, even if you do zip it on, you want to keep it for a few weeks, nonetheless, the zipper there shows and demonstrates that this isn't permanently going to be kept there, and therefore one may do so. The bigger issue is Velcro. Velcro is more of a debate, and one shouldn't use Velcro on Shabbat if you're going to be using it for more than 7 days. So if you have shoes with Velcro, and you bought the new shoes and you're just going to be slipping, you know, once, you just tighten and fasten it, and the rest of the time you leave it, then that should be avoided because that's already an attachment. Velcro, you know, using Velcro to attach together, that will be more of a problem. Sometimes you can get, you know, you buy new socks and they come attached, right? One may cut that open with a knife on Shabbat. Not this is a muktzah, but I may cut that open. Why? Because any tefillah is mum, it's not done for permanence, one may cut it. And therefore, when the manufacturer has made these socks and put in this, whatever it is, this material to connect these two socks together, it wasn't done for permanence, and therefore one may cut this material with a knife on Shabbat. Coming to an envelope now. An envelope, where do you want to open post on Shabbat? You got post on Shabbat, are you allowed to open it?
No.
Hmm? Why not?
Is it
like, huh?
Yeah, it's kind of like work. Like, it's you shouldn't. I mean, unless.
Okay, it may not.
No.
Why is it mukta?
Because it has no purpose for Shabbat.
Why is it on a purpose for Shabbat? Somebody sent you a happy birthday card. Why is it on a purpose? You want to read it on Shabbat? No. It's not. If you know for sure it's got business stuff inside, this is a bank statement or a business correspondence, then yeah, that's going to be mukta, I agree. But let's say just a random letter. You know, happy birthday or a card, something like that. One may open an envelope on Shabbat. According to the most poskim, one may open an envelope on Shabbat through tearing through it. One may do so. The Rabbi said definitely the Chazon Ish even permitted it. Actually,
tearing through it, which
happens. So that's what I'm going to say in a moment. The two ways of opening it. You can unseal it. You can unseal it. You can destroy it. Unsealing it, Rabbi Yosef seems to permit it, but it's very difficult to justify why that's the case. He wants to say that because the person who sealed it didn't seal it for permanent use, but the problem is, the person opening it may not open it by unsealing it. And there's a halakha that when something is sealed and it may doesn't have to be reopened, it's forbidden to open it because it may not have been opened through that. And therefore that's very difficult. What's definitely permissible is to tear it open. To tear it open and not creating a receptacle when you're opening it. So you destroy, you open it and destroy it, you know. Not something you can open, you can tear open an envelope and then you've got like a case for the letter inside that. That shouldn't be done. To tear it open in a fully destructive manner, and that is permissible to do so, provided of course there's no mukta involved. If you are certain there's business correspondence in this letter, which you can't read on Shabbat, you don't have to read business correspondence on Shabbat, then one may not open it. But if it's something which is mundane, but not business related, one may tear it open on Shabbat, one may tear open the letter on Shabbat. I quickly mentioned toilet paper, and that toilet paper is prohibited to be cut on Shabbat. One may not cut toilet paper on Shabbat, because this, I don't have time to go into it tonight, but there's another melacha called mechatech, which means any time when you cut to size, that's forbidden. And when you cut the toilet paper, you're cutting it by size to the exact measurement. Therefore, I may not do so. If one didn't cut toilet paper before Shabbat, one finds himself in a situation where he needs the toilet paper, then one may ask a non-Jew to do so. If there are no non-Jews to cut the toilet paper, then one may, with a shinui, with a deviation from normal practice, may open it, as in you, between your two elbows, you tear it, or with your left hand, perhaps, you tear it. Why? Because that's all only for rabbinically, and kavod abriyot, human dignity, all the rabbinic prohibitions are waived when it comes to human dignity. And of course, a person should ensure that he's got toilet paper before Shabbat. If he didn't do so, then he may.
And you cut it between the perforations.
Yeah.
If you're doing a bishinu, even that's permissible. But not because you shouldn't intend to do it there specifically. If it happens, it's fine. Right? If it happens there, it's fine, because there's nothing else to do. You shouldn't intend to do it there specifically. You're just tearing it. Maybe it cuts on the line there, but because you're doing a bishinu, it's permissible in a deviation from normal practice. But one should always try to make sure it's cut toilet before Shabbat. Food packaging, bottles, that's a real discussion another time. We'll maybe touch on that next time in the beginning. Just to summarize, what we've talked about is we talked about trapping, talked about killing, and finally sewing and unsewing. We've said that sewing and unsewing, sticking and unsticking something is not prohibited when it's not done permanently. And therefore, zippers and safety pins are permissible. Velcro is more problematic. So envelopes may be torn open on Shabbat to read the letter inside, provided it's not mukta and not business related. So I will see you, Bezat Hashem, next on the 26th of February. And that shiur will be doing a lot of things. We'll be doing writing, cakes, cutting through cakes on Shabbat with the words, the puzzle, CCTV, talking about Lego, opening cans and bottles. Opening umbrellas, swimming on Shabbat, a lot to talk about next time, B'zat Hashem, on the 26th of February. So we have four shiurim remaining, 26th of February, 5th of March, 12th of March, and the 26th of March.